Welcome to Finding Proof, where we discuss all things early stage VC.
We're your hosts, Thanasis and Jenny of the Proof Fund, and our goal is to get to know the best seed and early stage VCs out there.
In this episode, we're speaking with James Newell, who is a managing director with Voyager Capital, an early stage venture capital fund investing out of the Pacific Northwest. James, thanks for joining us today. Appreciate your time. Just to kick things off, tell us a little bit about Voyager. What is the fund about and what is your strategy?
Yeah, it's a little bit different than I think what most people hear because first and foremost, we're regionally focused. So everything we do, our primary thesis is around helping founders build in what we call the Cascadia region. And that might be a little bit of a local or provincial term, and I'll explain that. But the Cascadia mountain range runs in the Western U.S. through the U.S. states of Oregon, Washington, but also goes north of the border into Western Canada. And so that really forms the primary area of focus for us. Those Western Canada plus those two states is really the area where we think we can help founders most effectively. And that's different than some other firms that I've invested with, different than most people who are going worldwide trying to find the best founders. We really think we can help the founders in our region, which are massively underserved, to build companies in this region. The focus is at the earliest stages. So at this point, you could probably most accurately call us an institutional seed fund. The round sizes tend to be in the 2 to 10 range in terms of what we consider a core investment. And of course, if we look back 10 or 15 years ago, some of those used to be considered a Series A, but now they're almost all institutional seed, given how the definitions have changed in terms of what we're doing.
Sure. And I know there's a bunch of other funds that focus on the greater Seattle area. And it's the one area where I think I've seen more funds be totally geographically focused. So I'm curious, as a lot of funds move into a specific sector, let's say fintech, et cetera, you guys have chosen to stay core to that geographic region. And obviously, we can appreciate that there's a lot of tech talent there with Amazon and Microsoft, et cetera. Talk to us a little bit about that. That seems to not have changed about the fund.
Yeah, so we've been investing and frankly always headquartered in this region since inception. So the firm was founded in the late 90s, really as the formalization of some angel investing efforts of a few tech executives in the region. And so we'd always been headquartered up here, but at various points in the firm's history had invested, call it up and down the West Coast, and frankly, probably all the way into Austin, Texas, and maybe even the mountain region. But, you know, I think we looked at the landscape, we looked at our past successes and what we felt like we had done really well, and call it 8 or 10 years ago, made the decision to really double down on this area where we had seen a lot of success. Venture capital in the Bay Area, in New York, in Boston, in LA, it makes sense. If you do it well, it can be obviously very lucrative for your limited partners and for your fund, but it's hard to do that from the Pacific Northwest. And the opportunity up here, given how underserved this region is at the earliest stages, is what Voyager is positioned to really capture. So the ecosystem here is smaller in terms of VCs who are helping build companies. So maybe we're 1/10 the size of the Bay Area, but in terms of people looking to deploy capital, we have probably 1/100th of the capital. There's a real opportunity here that we've always positioned ourselves to take advantage of.
Right. And you seem like very hands-on investors. What are some of the ways that you seek to add value to the founders that you work with based on your background and expertise as a team?
I think that the truth is we have to be active and involved in our portfolio companies because this ecosystem, the founder profile that we see tends to be a little bit different from what most investors might see if they're only investing within the Bay Area counties, because we tend to deal with a higher percentage of first-time founders. We tend to deal with founders who are very engineering and product-centric. And so we typically are providing more support on the team building, personal and professional growth as executives, because these are people who need to grow into roles where they're managing the largest teams that they were ever going to manage and need help and expertise on bringing a product to market and thinking through how to do that outside of the tremendous resource bases of the large tech companies, which tend to have a lot of DNA in the founders up here. you can't really talk about our ecosystem without discussing the impact of Amazon and Microsoft.
Right.
Because on your founding team, or at least your early scaling team, you're going to find a lot of that DNA. And the way that they bring products to market is frankly pretty different than the way that startups typically do so.
It's interesting that you say that you typically see first-time founders. So is there no dynamic of like a flywheel of people coming out of Microsoft, starting a company, then selling it and starting again? Or is it that people tend to stay at these companies longer, or they made enough money, they're not really interested in stuff? What's that dynamic like?
Yeah, so we have some of that. The flywheel that exists in the Bay Area doesn't exist anywhere else at this point to that same level, where you have people who made money as founders because they had some sort of exit, then they become angel investors, they rest invest at Google because they sold their startup there, and then they go out and they do it again. And so that path, that profile, it's not necessarily typical in the Bay Area, but it's a lot more common than it is anywhere outside of that region, including Seattle. And our ecosystem, in terms of tech employees, we tend to have more longer tenured, more loyal, and maybe even less risk tolerant employees in our companies than you might in the great companies down in the Bay Area. And that's changing, but changing more slowly as we move maybe further and further away from the business culture of Microsoft in the mid-2000s. And as that changes and more talented people come up to this region, particularly from places like the Bay Area, you're starting to see that shift, but the population of repeat founders is just going to be smaller in a smaller ecosystem like Seattle.
And you guys focus on software, cloud, and big data applications. What are some trends that you're seeing lately?
We are addressing the problems that are getting solved within our ecosystem up here because we do bring this regional lens to everything that we do. And so one of the very fortunate things that I think Voyager has been able to take advantage of in recent years is that most of the really, really interesting megatrends within technology are being solved in our ecosystem. So this is the home to the public cloud. So we see a lot of ideas and teams working around the shift to cloud. This is one of the real centers of excellence in the world in terms of applied AI. And so those have become really, really core theses for us as we look for talented teams that are going to address these problems, because we can't necessarily approach things with the same type of secular trend, thematic investing that someone, maybe Union Square Ventures, can do, where they have an idea and they are going to go out and find the best team that's addressing that problem or fits that thesis. We need to look at what's being solved in our ecosystem. How do the problems and themes and sectors that we think are interesting, how do those line up with the talent base that we have that can address that? And then find the right founders to go after those problems. And I think that that's proven to be really successful here.
Is there one or two portfolio companies that maybe you want to walk us through? Tell us about how you found them, what you thought was interesting, and how they've developed, just so we can get a feel for your strategy.
So I'll tell you about a couple that I'm involved with. One that really should be on everybody's radar screen is a company called Syndio. And Syndio is really leading the conversation in terms of pay equity and bringing data to very challenging conversations that large companies are having in terms of how they treat their employees, and as importantly, how they're paying them, how those people are being compensated. And so it's probably, at least in the 5 years that I've been here at Voyager, probably the investment that I'm most proud of, because it was the last one that we did prior to really the world shutting down during COVID. We met the company through a friend who was considering taking a role there within their sales org and said, hey, like, what do you think of this company? What do you think of this idea?
How does it work exactly? What do they do?
What you have is a data science problem in terms of figuring out essentially who is a comparable person within an organization. And so you can't just look at your headline numbers and say, well, you pay this person differently than this person, because there could be explanatory factors that make that a reasonable reason to do so, because this person is based in Boston and this person is based in Bucharest, or could be their location, it could be their tenure, it could be a variety of things that would make sense.
So it's not just gender. Obviously, gender has been talked about a lot, but it's any factor, basically, just helping companies be more fair in how they compensate their people.
Correct. How they compensate, and increasingly how they promote and put people on tracks within these large organizations, which has been the big shift, I think, in terms of how companies are thinking, because you now need to know, hey, do I have a problem right now? am I going to have a problem 3 years from now? And how can I be proactive in making sure that I'm giving my employees, particularly within certain classes, a fair shot and a fair path in terms of progression within their organization? And large companies have started getting much more thoughtful about how they do that, which has been a really important shift, frankly, within the last couple of years, and one that we're really proud to be associated with, and frankly, was proud of making the decision to invest in the company at a point where nobody was worried about pay equity in spring of 2020. It was all about severance payments and layoffs. That's where people's heads were. But we knew that this was going to be a trend people were going to care about. It was going to be more important that you treat your employees fairly 3 years from the date at which we made that investment than it was at that time. And it was a trend that we wanted to get behind.
The business model is what? Is it a price based on the size of the organization, based on number of people being assessed? How does that work?
Yeah, as with most things within the HR suite, it is largely priced per employee per month. And it gives you a real-time view of your employee base because it can't be something that you look at once a year because you need it in order to not allow these types of inequities to creep into your compensation packages. The largest contributor to differences in pay is starting pay. And you don't hire one time a year. You hire throughout the year. And so that data needs to be brought into those conversations at every single point. So the company's done exceptionally well. Unfortunately, a big light was shined on this issue coming out of George Floyd in 2020. And basically every Fortune 500 company put out on Twitter, we treat our employees fairly. And then of course, that CEO then had to turn around and go, hey, I have no idea if what I just said was true. Can you actually look up some data on that? And that was basically an unknowable question for a lot of these companies. And so Syndio's really stepped into the breach and they're leading the conversation, a very important conversation around that now.
Yeah, and definitely an important one to have no matter what the size of the company is.
That's right.
Right. So would love to hear a little bit more about your personal background. How did you get into venture capital?
So I grew up here in the Seattle area, so it's interesting to be back investing in this ecosystem, but I actually spent most of my adult life and investing career down in the Bay Area. So I did my undergrad at the University of Washington, moved down to the Bay Area, thinking I would only be down there for 2 years to do a quick tour of duty in technology investment banking. I was an M&A banker for what was then called Bank of America Securities, now Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Ended up doing 4 years there and then ended up joining a really great firm down there called IVP, Institutional Venture Partners, which does later stage venture and a little bit of growth equity, and had a really, really great time there. Love the people there. They're tremendous investors. And frankly, didn't expect that I would ever move back to Seattle, but had a chance meeting with one of my now partners, Eric Benson, at the AWS reInvent conference at the end of 2015. And he mentioned that they were looking to hire a new partner and this is what they were needing to add to the firm and all of the cool stuff that was happening within Seattle's ecosystem. And I couldn't shake that idea of what would it mean to invest in Seattle? What would it mean to invest in the Cascadia region? Because it was very different from the type of thing that I was doing at IVP. And so we spent actually most of 2016 getting more familiar with each other and figuring out if we had chemistry in terms of working together. And at the same time, I was trying to build a thesis on investing in the Northwest, because investing in the Bay Area, it's not easy by any stretch, but it is obvious. It works if you do it well.
Yep.
And so I really wanted to test a thesis on investing back up here in my hometown. And by the end of that year, I was thrilled about the possibilities that Voyager had in front of them.
Right. And what was the experience like shifting from your time at IVP working more on the growth side to now being so early? What's that experience like? And what do you think are the fundamental characteristics that are really necessary for a VC to be successful in both?
I think in terms of what is similar, it really is, and this sounds obvious or maybe even cliche, but it really is all about the people. Mm-hmm. And successful companies at any stage have great people. And I don't know if I can think of an example where a company has succeeded in spite of a weak team. And so my belief that great teams make great companies has been strengthened in my time since shifting to the early stage. And so in terms of what I have taken from my IVP experience and seek to apply into the early stages, it really is that pattern recognition of what a successful scaling founder and founding team actually look like. The amazing thing about IVP, and frankly, one of the things that I miss the most, is IVP's deal flow and the scope of what they see is so good that I started there in 2009 and I left right at the end of 2016. I got to see every interesting company that got to scale. Those guys, in terms of actually seeing a deal, they just don't miss. And so I got to have a perspective on every late stage business model, but also every founder. And so seeing what threads I could see in those people that they had in common that allowed them to go from a crazy idea to seed or series A, the irrationality of deciding to found a company and all those things, and then seeing what they looked like at the series B, C, D, EF, all of the places where IVP had the potential to get involved, and trying to apply that pattern recognition to the early stage, I think has been the most helpful takeaway from that experience.
Was there anything that surprised you about early stage investing when you first started?
I think the biggest shift, or maybe the biggest surprise, is just how different the mechanism of finding companies is. Because if you are a later stage venture firm, you're dealing with a specific universe of companies. You can go into PitchBook, they have really good data, and you can sort by every Series A company, and you can say, okay, that's my universe. And like, let's just go through. It really is a different game in terms of the early stage, where knowing about the company is the hard thing. Whereas in the late stage, winning the deal is the hard thing. So it really is a different set of relationships you need, though relationship building is important in both aspects. But it really is, there are different criteria for success in the early stage versus the later stage.
We had spoken a little bit about the Seattle market when we spoke to our friend Greg Gottesman, who I'm sure you know at Pioneer Square Labs. We talked about it very briefly. So you mentioned that there's a gap in the early stage. So talk to us a little bit about what that ecosystem is like. If I'm an entrepreneur getting started now in Seattle, how do I go about getting your attention? Or is there an active angel scene? Or what is the Seattle market like?
There is an active angel scene. I would like to see more. And so you can look at the data and say, oh my gosh, Seattle needs more early stage venture capital. And that may be true. I don't feel that quite as acutely, which perhaps you can accuse me of being self-serving in that endeavor. But the big gap within Seattle's ecosystem, I think, is in the angel scene. We need more what I would call low conviction check writers, which are that profile that we talked about earlier of people who made money as founders and feel an obligation to write checks back into the ecosystem. Because that profile is less common up here, there's just fewer doors to knock on. And so I think we have some barriers in terms of raising that first friends, family, early angel dollars that make it more challenging to get a company started up here. And so part of that is cultural. I think people in the Pacific Northwest struggle to be showy. I lived in the Bay Area for a long time. You go to a party, you walk in, and somebody will tell you, oh, I'm an angel investor in Carta, and I did Gusto, and I did, and it's like, what is your name? I don't even know your name, and I need your portfolio. Like, I'm sorry, who are you? And I think we have this insular pearl clutching mentality of, oh, I could never tell you about my investments. That would be, what, do you want to see my W-2? And so we don't broadcast that. There isn't social status associated with being an angel investor in the same way that there is in the Bay Area. I think you could rightly argue that being an angel investor is a value destruction exercise. And so we don't have that class of investor up here commensurate with the opportunity, in my opinion. And so I think a lot of founders end up wanting some infrastructure, like, as you mentioned, Greg from PSL, that maybe is offered by something like a startup studio, or they end up going, man, it's too damn hard to raise up here. I got to go do a tour of duty in the Bay Area, or I got to go down there and see if I can raise an angel round down there, because there are people who will look at a pitch deck and they'll go, oh, you seem like a good person. Sure. Here's 200K. And getting that started is really important. So one initiative that we've had at Voyager is our pre-seed innovation program, which is meant to try to catalyze rounds. So a core investment for us is what I described earlier, that $2 to $10 million institutional seed. But we also have an innovation program where we write 100K checks into founders we love that are raising rounds in markets we think are really interesting, but they're not ready for a core Voyager investment. And the hope is that we can get some of the money up here off of the sidelines because they see an institution is involved and it gives them a little bit of social proof in terms of bringing their own checkbooks to play.
And what's your favorite advice to give to founders, particularly right now?
Right now, I think things are changing so quickly. And by the time this podcast is actually published, we might be in a fundamentally different spot. But right now, I think the best advice is to focus on unit economics, because an understanding of what it takes to acquire and deliver a product to a customer allows you to control your own destiny, regardless of what you're going to see in the fundraising environment, because we're getting new data points every day about what the fundraising environment looks like. And sometimes I go, oh, things are fine. And it's just a bunch of people signaling on Twitter and things are okay. And then sometimes I go, oh man, with interest rates rising, this is a total reset. And all of our companies should be thinking more closely about when their next round is going to be raised to make sure that they're fully funded. So I think just understanding your unit economics is probably the best advice. And realistically, that's probably true in any environment. It's probably good advice 8 months ago too.
Yeah. What's your prediction on the market moving forward on that note?
I think the market is cracked. We're fundamentally in a different place. And so we're probably going to get to some sense of normalcy. And the last 2 years weren't normal. They just weren't. And there's a lot of weird, wonky paper gains in terms of businesses that are overcapitalized and sitting at too high of a valuation. And we're going to need to walk some of that back and put the industry in a healthier place. So this is not going to be an awful time for the venture industry, but we're probably going back to normal times.
There's certainly a correction on valuations, and I think that's healthy, but it doesn't feel that the innovation is slowing down, right? If you look at companies, they're able to grow revenues really fast, and you still have people that are coming up with new innovative solutions in sometimes stodgy industries. So we haven't seen that slow down. Do you agree with that?
I have seen no meaningful impact in terms of deal flow, in terms of the level of interest in companies. There will probably be a point in the next couple of months where there's some real head scratching going on in terms of valuation, where we try to explain, no. This was November of last year. This is where the valuation was, and this is where we are now. There will be something lost in translation with founders, I have no doubt. I don't worry about where we are from an innovation standpoint. The shift to Web3, it's just driving so much of the conversation today. And that feels like there's still another shoe to drop there in terms of a reset in that market. But in terms of B2B SaaS, where we focus, I think we're still in really good shape.
Great.
So now we're going to shift to our 4 standard question segment. We're looking forward to hearing your answers. Our first question is our MVCA question. The National Venture Capital Association advocates for public policy that supports the venture community and the American entrepreneurial ecosystem. If there was one thing that you would change about the VC industry or one policy that you would advocate for, what would it be?
Well, it's got to be increasing immigration. I think immigration and the fact that smart, talented, risk-tolerant people want to come here to build companies is probably the greatest advantage that we have as a country. And so I'd love to see founder visa. I'd love to see, if you get an advanced degree, a STEM degree within school here, I would love to see a visa staple to it. We need to fix the H-1B visa system. Overhauling that, I think, would pay tremendous dividends for us as an industry. And like realistically, I think it'd be a tremendous advantage to us as a country. You don't like what Russia's doing? I bet they've got a lot of engineers who would want to build software within the US. Let's bring them here. I think that'd be a great outcome.
Yeah. And the Ukrainian engineers.
No question. Yeah.
But no, fully support that. Number 2, if you weren't a VC and money wasn't a concern, what career would you have?
Well, is it too obvious to say founder? I don't know if I'm cheating the question by saying I would want to be within the same ecosystem on the other side of it. So that would be my answer, but I do feel like I'm cheating the question. So
what would you build? What would be the company?
That's a good question. The last time I looked at building a company, it was kind of similar to Convoy, which is interesting because that's obviously one of Seattle's lighthouse late stage companies right now. So it would probably be something in an old stodgy industry like logistics, where you can fundamentally change and bring software into paper-based processes. I suspect it would be something like that, although they're such a great company that I don't think it'd be possible to chase them down at this point.
Yeah. And logistics, because solving a problem, or is that something that you personally find really interesting?
I personally find it really interesting, and I think it solves tremendous problems. Look at, if you don't follow Ryan Peterson from Flexport on Twitter, I mean, he's a tremendous follow because he's addressing some of these issues that we're seeing in supply chain. and the way that the world actually works and the way that goods move. It really does underlie so many interesting aspects of what we're seeing within foreign policy, within politics, within economics. Like, it really is an underpinning for that. So I think it's a really interesting category. And it's one that I pay a lot of attention to because, as you might expect, given the Port of Seattle, which you can actually see right behind me on the Zoom, or Amazon being based here in Seattle and obviously their logistics footprint, it's an area of focus for this region and one that I'm consistently paying attention to.
Awesome. Number three is, who is someone that you look up to and why?
Well, this is really, really topical and current, but I think Volodymyr Zelensky is a really easy choice. I think given the way our political discourse has gone over the last dozen years or so, it's easy to feel cynical about leadership. And I have just found him to be tremendously inspiring in a way that I thought I was too bruised and cynical to feel inspired, but I'm just consistently impressed by his willingness to share sacrifice with his people in the pursuit of greater good. So I think he feels like a pretty easy choice at this point.
Absolutely. I certainly echo that. I think a lot of people would as well. So number four is, what is the best piece of advice you've ever received?
Great question. When I was at IVP, IVP's founder was still a bit involved. He had started to wind down, but a gentleman named Reed Dennis, who had founded IVP, I think in 1980. And he gave advice on what you need to be a great venture capitalist. And his list of three was curiosity, judgment, and optimism. And those are the three components of every great venture capitalist that he had seen. And I think about that often because I consider myself somebody who has a really curious mind. I like to read, I like to think, I like to listen to perspectives on things. Judgment is really what you develop over time. I don't think you come into this industry with good judgment. I think that that's part of the pattern recognition that you learn. And then optimism, because that's really the underpinning of this industry, an industry that's characterized by asymmetric outcomes. And so approaching every investment with, what could go terribly right here? Because it's a little bit crazy to think about a blind pool investing in companies that are going to lose money. Hey, my business loses money. Do you want to invest in it? Well, of course not. That doesn't make any sense, but of course it does. And you have to have optimism about what those outcomes can be. And then I generally add a fourth one, which is integrity, because you don't play this game once. Every single deal or every interaction that you have is developing a reputation. And I don't want to work with people who have low integrity. And I hope that those kinds of people get chased out of the industry. So the fourth one that I add to that would be integrity.
James, thank you very much for joining us today. We really appreciate your time and learned a lot about Voyager.
Of course. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And follow us on Twitter at ProofVC or on our website at proof.vc.